If you plan to do some online Christmas shopping on Amazon, you can help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. Just go to smile.amazon.com, sign into your Amazon account, enter Lutheran Public Radio into the charitable organization search field, and click Select. A percentage of your purchase will be donated to Issues Etc. Smile.amazon.com and choose Lutheran Public Radio. Thanks for your support.
This involves my 14-year-old getting upset about the election and screaming no abortions really loudly.
I have a 14-year-old upset
and I was like,
well,
you haven't kissed a boy yet. Don't use that word so flippantly. But she...
It's George Stephanopoulos's comedian wife, Alex Wentworth. And she's talking there on ABC's The View about her 14-year-old daughter's reaction to Donald Trump's election. No abortions, screamed loudly. We're going to be talking about abortion, that reaction, and the adoption option. Joy Pullman joins us on this Thursday afternoon, December the 15th. She's managing editor of The Federalist, author of a recent column titled, If George Stephanopoulos' Daughter Wants an Abortion, Can I Have Her Baby? And she's author of the forthcoming book, The Education Invasion, How Common Core Fights Parents for Control of American Kids. Joy, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you for having me.
Joy, what did we just hear there from The View, George Stephanopoulos' wife, Allie Wentworth, and her daughter's reaction to the victory of Donald Trump?
She had to tell the story about how her 14-year-old daughter's first reaction was screaming, no abortions. And, of course, when I saw that clip running around the internet, as a mom and as a woman, I thought, why on earth is that the gut reaction of what is just, you know, barely a child, you know, a 14-year moving from childhood into adulthood. And that's a really young lady to be thinking about abortion as her first thing when she thinks of the election results. And so, I mean, really the only thing that I can think of is just to guess that, you know, this is something she's caught by listening to conversations at home, because that's what happens with my own kids. You know, I had one day, my six-year-old son goes to me, Mommy, you know, you're like Mitt Romney. And I said, do you even know who Mitt Romney is? And he says, yeah, he's this guy who ran for president. Well, that's the way that kids pick up a lot of their political ideas. It's not really direct, unless parents are deliberately trying to do that, and very few parents, you know, really do that with their kids. So it's got to be, you know, that something is going on in her home where she feels like, to her parents, you know, abortion is a really key and emotionally important issue, and it may be, you know, a litmus test for folks around her for thinking about who should be the president.
So you say that however she got the idea and what accounts for her reaction, she didn't have a big reason to worry, first of all, because, as you say, Trump cannot ban abortions. What are you talking about?
Well, the Supreme Court, you know, is basically the entity that's in control of abortion in America ever since Roe versus Wade. So there are, of course, things that a president can do that can influence, the number of abortions, how easy and widespread abortion is in the country, and whether taxpayers have to pay for it. But nationally, outlawing abortion is really something that's out of the president's hands. A president can influence that, of course, by appointing new Supreme Court justices. But again, you know, the majority, even Donald Trump, is not likely really to appoint the three justices necessary to flip the court on that issue. And then not only would he have to appoint those three justices over the course of his one or two terms as president, but those justices would have to get a court case that, you know, is a good court case, and then they would have to actually go ahead and reverse what has been pretty long-standing precedent in this country. So it's not just, you know, the president can't just, sign and pull out his pen, you know, and his phone, like other folks have talked about presidents doing, and make a law. It would be a really long and kind of drawn-out process.
It does kind of make one wonder, because she's obviously been fed a lot of the rhetoric of the pro-choice side, which for, I suppose, the better part of the 40-some-odd years that Roe's been in place, been fear-mongering on their own about how Roe is just about to be overturned if we allow any law to be passed that would regulate or call into question the Roe decision. Well, Roe's doomed. Where
right.
is the source of
well,
that fear-mongering?
Well, even if Roe versus Wade is overturned, that doesn't even outlaw abortion in this country. What it does is say, okay, you know, regulating it is up to states. So obviously there's a number of states in this country that are deep blue, or even some purple states, I could imagine, keeping it legal, you know, and possibly, and there'd be probably a number of states that would go the European route. There's a lot of progressive folks in Europe. You know, the standard there is to have abortion banned after 12 weeks gestation. So anyway, so again, you know, the idea that abortion is going to be over in this country just because a Republican gets into office anywhere is ludicrous, and it's really an unfair charge to be making against folks. It's not a good faith argument.
Also, you point out that there's something in her reaction which is, I think, an indictment of maybe feminism or the pro-choice movement larger, and that is the central place of abortion in, I guess, not only women's lives, but even in 14-year-olds' lives.
Right. It's I mean, so again, I have a daughter, and the last thing I want her to do is think that her the possibility of her having a good future depends on her ability to keep her womb empty. And that's really what the abortion lobby basically says to women. It tells them, be afraid, be very afraid. Your life is over if you get pregnant. And so we have, there's all kinds of effects from that sort of messaging that happen in society that aren't, you know, just even directly related to people getting abortions. But for example, millennials, you know, almost 90% of young female millennials want to have children, but almost very, very low rates of us are married and having children. You know, we're not fulfilling what we say we want to be doing in the case of having children. And I think a good deal of that is based on this fear-mongering about what an obstacle, what a hindrance, you know, just a drain on your life a little child is. It's very anti-child, it's very anti-human. And again, that's really not only just related to abortion, but that again is something that a 14-year-old will pick up, anti-baby messaging, rather than something that is not only more accurate, you know, as I had children, my own very negative perception about them drastically changed just from encountering these little beautiful creatures. So it's really not fair to, first of all, lie to young ladies about the wonders of having a child and the miracle that can happen inside a woman's body and with her husband, just on that level. But it also leads to really terrible outcomes, such as them feeling like having to kill a child once it's inside our wombs is really their only option for having a happy life, when really the reality is almost exactly the opposite.
And feminism has depicted it as not just a human right, a basic constitutional right, but as something that's essential to female identity. Talk about that.
Yes, that's absolutely right. Well, and again, I actually find this as a woman, I find it very demeaning. It tells a woman that one of the things that a woman's body uniquely does, has the capacity to do, to bring forth, to nurture young, new life, you know, that is something that requires not just a woman to be present, but a very, very large amount of energy expended from a mom in those early years that just isn't, you know, it's not equal to what the father has to expend. Now, of course, his children need him. His wife very much needs him, you know, but the intensive nurturing that is required to grow a baby, you know, to get them to be a little bit self-sufficient, that's largely what, you know, requires a woman. So to say to women that this wonderful thing that your body is designed to do is evil, we hate it, it's in the way, is really not only negates the child, but it negates the mother. So as a woman, again, and I mentioned this earlier, growing up, I came from a very conservative religious household, and I even still got those messages from the culture, and I was frightened of having children. And so when I started happening to have them, as does once, you know, you get married, then it was a major mind shift for me, and I began to also be angry at everything that I had been implicitly told by the culture, because I was finding that they had lied to me, and it really had made, it had made me have very negative thoughts for a very long time about something that is beautiful and wonderful and I really find fulfillment in. And it makes me sad to know that many other women are not having, they're not being able to feel fulfilled in that way, to enjoy that creative capacity of our bodies, because we're being lied to.
Or if they do happen to experience it and in, oh, God forbid, enjoy motherhood, they're somehow betraying their sex.
That's right. You're dirty, you know, you're a breeder. All of these really horrible things that people say about women. Again, I think it's actually anti-woman. So it's done in the name of women, but it is against what we feel, what we know, our experience. And so it's kind of a weird 180 where you know, the line that you hear very commonly in our culture is the opposite of the truth. And again, that's psychologically damaging, but it's not just psychologically damaging. Again, we're talking about abortion here. This is the ending of a unique human life with its own DNA, you know, with its own fingerprints, its heartbeat, its own blood type. And so, you know, what you think might just be, oh, it's just a narrative, it's just a story. Well, that has some very devastating evil consequences in our country.
And that narrative has a chapter missing, which is, as you say, adoption, and not just adoption as, you know, a process, but the desperate desire that many, many couples have for children. Talk about that.
Well, and again, that was something that I had to learn growing up because, you know, when I was young, I thought, why in the heck would anybody ever want a baby? And then, you know, as I just learned more about it, I met women who want a baby so badly, and their bodies, you know, for whatever reason, or their husband's bodies are not making those babies. So there is definitely in our culture a mismatch between people who are wonderful couples who, you know, would be beautiful parents who just want, you know, to snuggle up with that a little person and kiss them and read them books and take them on walks, you know, and be there for their first day of school and everything that goes into those beautiful moments that make for a good life. And they can't have that because they, for whatever reason, they can't have children. And so, again, look, even in the middle of that brokenness, there is an opportunity for them to meet those desires, those good desires to love somebody small. Because there are mommies who do have babies that they can't care for in, you know, in a similar way. And so when the people with who have these sorts of needs, you know, on both sides can match up, they can create something beautiful where everyone is having their needs met and something good is happening. But, and as I note in my article, because of abortion, we're not having this matchup between people who have a need, who have a child that needs good care, and people who are just desperate to give the child that loving, lifelong care. 36 couples are waiting for every single baby available to be adopted inside the United States, and that's largely because those babies are being aborted.
So it really is. It's not just that adoption is a better option, which it certainly is a better option for everyone involved. It is that abortion has shut the door on that option for so many people.
Right. That's absolutely right. So we have, again, it's not that we have a surplus of babies with no families to send them to. We have a surplus of good families who are just desperate to take these babies that are otherwise, you know, I don't want to get too graphic. This is a family show. But, you know, the babies that could have beautiful, wonderful parents who will give them a good life are instead being put in garbage cans.
What would be a realistic reaction for someone who is, well, they're hopeful for the protection of the unborn? Someone, a child, maybe even a 14-year-old girl, who's been taught that children are tremendous gifts and blessings. She aspires to be a mother. And she also aspires to see the unborn protected. Is Donald Trump the panacea for that?
No, I mean, I don't think, again, this goes to kind of the fatal flaw of, you know, one of the fatal flaws of this feeling from this young girl is that the president isn't actually an emperor. An American president is not a dictator, thank God. You know, our American system is set up to be such that that cannot be the case. So given that, even, and I do have some doubts about Donald Trump's record on life issues. He doesn't, you know, seem to know the lingo very well, and it's unclear exactly what his policies are and will be. He's made a number of typically Republican statements on that, which generally support life, and he's made appointments, or, you know, making appointments that seem to go in that direction. But even given that that's the case, again, you know, the most that a Donald Trump presidency could do, even if he was all gung-ho about protecting lives from the moment of conception, would be reduce the abortion rate, would be appoint a couple of good Supreme Court justices, would be, you know, protecting taxpayer funding from funding this immoral activity, and so on and so forth. So it could mitigate the abortion culture, but really what changing that takes is a widespread culture shift, and that's something that the president can influence but cannot do himself. So what it requires is all the rest of us doing, you know, talking about this to our families, talking about this to our friends, saying positive things about children to our children, you know, to our associates, to people you see in the mall, to kind of doing our own little part to create the culture of life so that young ladies like this get the message that children are not an automatic burden. They're, in fact, never a burden. Somebody always wants every child. And no one has to be afraid or forced or pushed or manipulated into doing, you know, terrible things to themselves and their own children out of fear that even worse things will happen if they don't.
Joy Pullman is managing editor of The Federalist and author of a recent column titled, If George Stephanopoulos' Daughter Wants an Abortion, Can I Have Her Baby? Author of a forthcoming book, The Education Invasion, How Common Core Fights Parents for Control of American Kids. You can read the column on the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Joy, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Carol Tobias is with us on the other side of the break, president of National Right to Life based in Washington, D.C. We're going to talk about a new study on the effect of abortion on women's mental health. Some might say, well, it just disproves everything the pro-lifers have been saying about the detrimental effects of abortion on women. Stay tuned. Christmas is a holy day, not just an ordinary holiday. It's when we celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ, our Savior. That's why Emmanuel Press keeps Jesus as the focus of all their Christmas cards. And that's why they use the words of Scripture and the poetry of hymns inside the cards to confess our hope in Christ. Visit their website at emmanuelpress.us to see a variety of cards, including a brand new card for 2016. EmmanuelPress.us.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.